Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
So as I said there, 13-year-olds have better relationships with their parents, but they have fewer friends than a decade ago. And this is all according to research published this morning by the ESRI, which examined data from the Growing Up in Ireland research. And I'm joined now by Dr. Emer Smith, research professor at the ESRI, and also by Mark Smith, who is a chartered clinical psychologist. So Dr. Emer Smith, let's go through this first. Fewer friends, better relationships with parents. On the relationships with the parents, you say you see from this research a more democratic approach to parenting, and that's leading to better relationship between the child and the parent.
Yes, indeed. So safer parents dealing with misbehaviour, they're more likely now to explain what the young person did wrong, much less likely to shout at them or to use punitive approaches like grounding. So as a result, we see lower levels of conflict between parents and their teenage children. And young people themselves are more likely to see their mothers as being responsive to their needs.
Okay, so that is a good news part of this story. But then the mothers are more likely to report that their 13-year-olds have problems interacting with peers. So that does that flow into the other finding, that they have fewer friends?
They are very closely interrelated. So we're seeing smaller friendship groups, smaller numbers of close friends than we did 10 years previously. So 10 years previously, over half would have had three or fewer friends. Now, over half will have three or fewer friends compared to 4 in 10 years previously. And we're seeing a big reduction in the numbers who have large friendship groups, like six or more.
And do you know why that is the case?
We're not sure. We need to delve in deeper, but the pandemic possibly made an impact, because this group didn't have smaller friendship groups when they were age 9 before the pandemic. So we think it might be that, but it could also be linked to increased use of screen time.
Okay, well, we'll delve into more those issues in more detail with Mark in a moment. Something else you found on the sport front, there are more of them taking part in sport on a weekly basis of 13-year-olds.
Yes, there was positive findings there. We see an increase in weekly involvement in organised sport and a reduction in the number of young people who have very low levels of physical exercise. So that's very encouraging.
Yeah, it's just really interesting that overall, you know, those who feel that they're struggling financially, they have a tougher time in general. I mean, people won't be surprised, I suppose, to hear that. But when it comes to relationships with their parents, they're impacted by the financial background that they're coming from.
Very much so. It's a smaller group than it was 10 years before, because that group was still in the tail end of the recession. But for this group, we see that financial strain, so having difficulties making ends meet, is linked to greater parent-child conflict. And that does show the need to target adequate levels of income support towards families, you know, to improve their well-being.
Yeah, and what it tells you as well, I see from the research, is they have less full lives in general if they're living in a financially difficult household.
Yeah, overall, different measures of disadvantage showed similar patterns. So we see that these young people are less likely to take part in sport, hard exercise. They're less likely to be involved in cultural activities like drama, dance or music, and they're less likely to read for pleasure. So this is going to contribute to an ongoing gap, a social gap, in their outcomes.
Mm-hmm. And less likely to read for pleasure. There'll be many parents devastated to hear that, but that's probably the impact of screen time as well, would you say?
It's interrelated, but like, we also counted reading for pleasure as reading on the screen, and that doesn't seem to be translating. It does seem to be a shift away from reading for pleasure per se.
All right, well, Emer, stay with us, because as I said, we have Mark Smith with us, past president of the Psychological Society of Ireland. Mark, when you hear that teenagers have fewer friends rather than 10 years ago, is that a concern, or is that just a way of life now?
I don't think it's a concern. I think 10 years ago, when I would speak to young people, they had, I think, a misguided sense of what friendships were. So they would value and count how many 100 or 1,000 friends they have on a particular social media platform as a measure of their popularity. And I think young people, to give them credit, are more discerning now about the importance of having a close group of trusting friends that they can share their emotions with, that they can feel connected to. But also they will have friend groups that they're not necessarily close with, and then they'll have acquaintances. So they see them as kind of being differentiated between close to friendships to acquaintances. And I see them as being quite happy with that.
Mm-hmm. So that's, you're not concerned about that. And you must be encouraged by the fact that they're reporting, both parents and the teenagers, better relationship between the two.
I think that's a really good positive coming out of this research, and anything that shows longitudinal trends is really good. But I think one of the interesting pieces that's come from parents being very concerned about young people's mental health and more aware of it is that there's an increased parental recognition about the protective nature of the parent-child relationship, about just spending time with them, about being there, being part of their lives. And I think, interestingly, that could be one of the things that came from the pandemic, is that we were forced to spend more time with our kids and to see, to understand their lives, their inner experiences, and for the kids to see ours. And we know that parent-child relationship is one of the really most significant positive protective factors for mental health, both in children, but also for parents themselves.
It's interesting, isn't it, that the parenting approach now has changed. Now, we heard Emer explaining that there's a more democratic approach now coming through in this research. And it would be fascinating to know how and when that happened with the generation of adults who are parenting now.
It is, and I suppose it's one thing that maybe we need to delve into a little bit more, because that's not always, a more democratic parenting style is not always the most helpful to children. We also do need boundaries, and we need clear differentiation between parents who are in charge and having kind of clear authoritative control of the home and behaviour and being in charge of that. I do see sometimes children and young people who feel that they're on a par with their parents, that their views in relation to important issues like whether they go to school or not, what time they go to bed at, how much money they get, are equal with the parents. And in those situations, you do get more conflict. So we need to listen to kids, we need to understand their inner experiences, but we also need to be parents too.
Emer, just to come back to you on that point, it's more though that, well, what the research is telling you is that parents are explaining to their children now what they did wrong rather than allowing them to ride roughshod over the parents.
Yes, and obviously we could go in deeper to that kind of dynamic Mark has just talked about, but it is more about explanation and less likely to kind of shout at the young person or to ground them. And I think, you know, it's entirely possible to enforce boundaries while explaining rather than shouting.
Mm-hmm. And that would be healthy, Mark, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's all about communication. And one of the things that young people will complain about most is you don't understand. So when a parent is making an attempt to at least understand what might be behind the behaviour, and all behaviour is a means of communication. Sometimes we might kind of react badly to that and see it as bold behaviour rather than actually, you know what, what's going on right here? So sometimes we see a child maybe who's really, really angry, but actually behind that is a lot of anxiety. They're worried and scared, but that's how they communicate it. So any effort by a parent to understand behaviour rather than judge it as just being bold is always going to be more positive for that relationship.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk a little bit more about the friendships, the people who you would see struggling? Are the friendships the major issue in many of those cases?
I would say in most of them, one of the biggest challenges for any teenager, especially at the age of 13, it's a particularly vulnerable age group because it involves massive transitions. So they're trying to figure out who I am, who I like, who I am myself, how I fit in. But I'm transitioning from primary school where I have one teacher, one classroom, to potentially 10 different classrooms, 10 different teachers, but also the body is going through some of the biggest physiological and emotional changes it will ever do. And that happens at different times. So the rules are very different socially at 13 than they are at 6, 7, 8, where we all run around and play kind of structured games. At 13, it's about who I am and what I like. And it's very difficult to know that. So you get a lot of disturbance and transitions over the age of 13 to probably 14 and a half, where it settles down a little bit. So it's really hard to know who I'm going to be close to when I don't know who I am yet and my identity keeps shifting.
Has that always been the case? And the reason I ask is because I notice when we're asking people to send in their questions for David Coleman, who's a clinical child psychologist too, we get a lot of people, you know, struggling with how to deal with this and how to help their children around that age of 12, 13, 14. So are the friendship issues new?
I don't think the issues are new, but I think it's become more complicated because it's not just about the real world identity, but it's also their online identity. So who they are on TikTok, who they are on Snapchat, and the merger of those. So when we grew up at that age, it was just the sense of who we were in the real world. But now we've got this merge of identities. And for young people, they just see it as their identity. As adults, we kind of struggle to see, well, how do the two of those merge? So they're trying to understand a very much more complicated matrix of self-identity at this point, while again all the physiological stuff is happening. So it's a complicated piece for them, but I think the most important for us as parents and as adults interacting with them is to validate how hard it is, to try and understand the emotional impact of it rather than try to shift it or change it. And what I talk to parents about is that, you know, what we need to do is to be there as a safety net underneath the tightrope to catch them when they fall, but that we can't prevent them from falling.
All right. Good advice, Mark. Thank you very much. Mark Smith, chartered clinical psychologist, and also Dr. Emer Smith, who's a research professor with the ESRI. Coming up next on the programme, Brian O'Connell reports on why there are so few rental properties available in Irish cities.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.